You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. We're working our way through exit interviews from last season, breaking down each player's strengths and weaknesses and looking ahead at what happens with them next season. Make sure to check out previous episodes if you haven't already. And to help me out on today's show, he regularly appears on the Miami Heat Beat podcast as their resident statistician, Mr. Christian Hernandez. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, man. I'm very happy to be on. I'm glad that you invited me on to talk about Duncan, because he probably was my favorite story from this Heat season. So I'm definitely ready to go into what was good, what was bad, and hopefully where he can improve moving forward.
That sounds great. You let the cat out of the bag a little early there. Today's show absolutely will be focused on Duncan Robinson. And I reached out to you, one, because obviously you are an expert in the Heat podcasting community and all things Heat related, but on Duncan, let's just say you've been very honest and open regarding your praise of Duncan Robinson. And it makes a lot of sense. Look, he had a fantastic season. I don't think anybody foresaw him having this kind of impact. I remember when he was just trying out for this team and trying to earn a spot, going between here and the G League and not exactly making an impact. He only played in 15 games the previous season. And then he goes on to make 73 appearances, including 68 starts, historically good shooting from the field. Just an incredible achievement for a player that a lot of people did not think would even make it to this level, him included. I mean, I think woven into the whole story of Duncan Robinson, it's easy to kind of get into the fact that he had to work to get to this point, that he had transferred from a small school to get to Michigan, et cetera. Everybody's familiar with that story. But just a tremendous impact, tremendous role that he was able to play last year. It was just a lot of fun to watch him take that incredible leap in as far as his overall impact is concerned.
Oh, definitely. And like, just kind of going back to what you were saying about him kind of coming out of nowhere. I mean, for me, I have just a really funny personal story where I believe it was only a couple months after the Heat had first signed Duncan. So this was in the off season before last season.
Right.
And I was actually just at Taco Stand, which is a really good Mexican place.
He loves it in Wynwood.
In Wynwood? Oh, did he talk to you about this?
No. I've talked to him about it, because one time I was interviewing Chris Silva, and we were at his hotel. Silva had a bag there, and he was like, "Oh, Duncan raves about this place. He took me here." And I was like, "Oh, wow." So the next time I covered a game, I talked to Duncan, and he's like, "Oh, my God, that place is the bomb." And when I had him on the show, I asked him if that was one of the things that he missed the most. And he's like, absolutely. The lack of food options, including the taco stand in Wynwood. So I'm glad you brought it up.
That is actually incredible, because the first experience I ever really had with Duncan Robinson was that summer I went to Taco Stand with my girlfriend, and he was sitting right to my left just by himself, very calmly eating a burrito. And I mean, it's just funny because like, he's a really big guy compared to most people, but sure, he still was kind of just blending in there. And I had to like point out to my girlfriend and say, "Hey, you know, this guy's actually a Heat player." And personally, I didn't think that he was going to really become much of a rotation player. So I kind of thought he was just going to be like an end of the bench guy. So that was the end of it. But now in retrospect, it's hilarious that his game has gotten to the place where it is. And really because of the nature of the pandemic and everything, we're talking like probably 16 months since that interaction. And now he is one of the most highly regarded shooters in the world, which is wild.
Yeah. And he took a huge, like, as far as his physical development is concerned, like, he was slight. He needed to put on weight, but he put on the work. I remember him being interviewed by my former co-host in Summer League, and he was talking about wanting to constantly improve and keep putting on some muscle mass and things of that sort. And we're like, yeah, okay, that's great. That makes a lot of sense. But it wound up benefiting him greatly, and he wound up having a huge impact. I just didn't see that happening. When I remember even previewing last season and thinking about, you know, where he was going to fit in the rotation, you had Deion on the roster, you had just drafted Tyler Hero, you had this Kendrick Nunn guy who was apparently going to get some playing time. There was no way Duncan was going to be starting as often as he did, having the kind of impact. It was incredible to see it. 270 made threes, nearly 45% of all of his three-point attempts. Historically good. It's just unbelievable. And I know it's kind of easy to just get caught up in that, but we should on times. I know it's easy, especially for you and others, to just look into the numbers, but you kind of have to just appreciate how great it is for him to be able to climb to this point and excel and become a historically great shooter.
Oh, no, absolutely. And you were kind of pointing also earlier, you know, how he really has taken the time to kind of develop his body. I remember, and I actually went back and searched it, and I found the tweet. It was back on October 3rd, which I guess must have been one of the first glimpses we got into training camp. You know, I literally tweeted, one guy I've noticed looking noticeably bigger in the background of a lot of these Heat training camp pictures, Duncan Robinson. And that was also because, I mean, one, it was a huge change just from what he was signed in, what was it, like April of 2019?
Right.
So we're talking about 6 months between that time. And he put on a lot of weight, pulled on a lot of muscle, especially in his upper body. So he was a totally different looking guy. And it definitely benefited him because he ended up taking on, you know, guarding a lot of wings throughout the season purely because of his size and where they would slot him at times with Spo's nature to go a little smaller. So it was really important for him to put on that weight.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, if I recently made the point that I think Bam is probably Miami's best player, he's the key to unlocking so much of what they do offensively and defensively. You can make a strong argument that obviously Jimmy is your go-to player. He's the guy who's going to get you that bucket when you need to. But if you need a big three, or if you need a third best player on this roster, I think it's pretty clear that it's Duncan. He is the third part of helping unlock what makes this team great because of his constant movement, because of his incredible shooting ability, because of his gravity as a shooter. We saw that throughout the regular season. And of course, we saw it in the Orlando bubble. Even when teams were able to focus on shutting down his offense to some degree, he was still a factor out there. He was still drawing multiple defenders. You had to be able to pay attention to him. If not, you're risking him being able to get hot very early on and continue to make a high number of threes. And so to me, I think it's pretty clear that he's Miami's third best player. You could probably argue Goran is in there too, but either way, I mean, Duncan is just, I think Duncan makes his team more dangerous in a way that Goran did not until the Orlando bubble.
Correct. Yeah. And I think like the way that I usually try to frame that is I think that Goran is the team's third best player, but I would argue that Duncan is the team's third most important player just because of the way that he kind of opens up the offense for the other guys, especially when you have a 1-2 punch like Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, who are two guys who really aren't known to be shooters. I know that Jimmy really turned it around in the playoffs relative to his shooting performances in the regular season. But they're not really, either of those guys are really known as like floor spacers. So having somebody like Duncan who can create, you know, additional space for them to drive and operate and facilitate, that's really huge given kind of who Jimmy and Bam are.
So obviously his shooting is the biggest strength of Duncan's game. Was there anything else that may have stood out to you regarding a particular strength? I think his defense, certainly we'll talk about that in the next segment, but I think it probably took a slight improvement in the Orlando bubble. I think his passing is somewhat underrated too. I remember Eric Spoelstra actually talking about him being a great inbounds passer. So that might be the next step, that he kind of likened him to Shane Battier as far as being able to read the floor and understand exactly where to make plays. Was there anything else that might have stood out to you as far as a strength of Duncan's?
Definitely when it comes to the passing, I think that's something that has definitely been growing over time. You know, just an easy example going back to the regular season, October, November, December, he was averaging 0.4 assists a game, 0.9 assists a game, and 1.1 assists a game. By February, he was averaging over 2 assists a game. He finished those closing months averaging just under 2 assists a game. And he actually took that to another level in the playoffs, partially because of the amount of attention that he started receiving in the playoffs. I think that was probably, I think it's going to be great for his long-term growth. Yeah. The amount of attention that was put on him defensively throughout the playoffs, almost every single round, he was one of the top two focuses of each team's defense. They did not want Duncan to start getting off. He was taking a lot of really contested shots to the point where he was struggling at times. And I think his struggles, the perception of his struggles kind of ended up outweighing the reality because he ended up shooting 40% from three in the playoffs. He did have off games, but a lot of that was him kind of learning, hey, I'm going to have to play through this level of defensive intensity one way or the other. You know, if that means taking more contested shots, if that means being more of a facilitator, he was open to doing that and he benefited from it.
Absolutely. All good points. Were there any statistics that you wanted to bring up? I know you brought up the assist numbers a little bit, but I know that's your forte. Is there anything else that you might have wanted to include there as far as a particular strength of Duncan's?
Oh, definitely. I mean, going back to the regular season on-off numbers, he was both the most important player in terms of how well the Heat played while he was on and how poorly they played when he was off. The Heat were plus 7.5 net, which means that their offensive rating was 7.5 points better than their defensive rating over 100 possessions. That was the best mark on the team. And on the flip side, when he was off the court, the Heat were a minus 5 net overall, which was the worst net rating for any player while he's off the court. So that kind of really emphasized the importance that Duncan had in the regular season, especially at times during the season when, you know, Jimmy had some times, well, it seemed like he was also dealing with some injuries, but he had some struggles during the season. And there were times where, you know, he wasn't contributing to the level that we saw in the playoffs. And Duncan at points was really picking up the slack. You know, I believe it was, it was in March, he averaged 11 three-pointers per game and made 52% of them. Like that is literally unheard of. That is Steph Curry on his best shooting streak type shooting. Like that goes to show like how impactful somebody like Duncan can be, even though, and as I'm sure we'll get to later, you know, he definitely gives a little bit of what he brings back on the defensive end. And that's definitely somewhere where he can improve to add to his overall value.
Well, you're absolutely right that was at March. That was when Jimmy was going through some injuries. He missed a few games. Myers and Tyler Hero were both out a number of games. They were just incorporating Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala into the rotation. So there were some gaps there in the normal rotation that Spoelstra uses, but Duncan stepped up and he kept Miami playing at a high level. But unfortunately, as you hinted at, there are negative aspects to Duncan's game, and we'll talk about that in the next segment before breaking down what his next developmental step is. You're listening to Locked On Heat. At some point in the day, Christian, you're bound to hit a wall. I know mine is usually around 6-7 o'clock. It usually hits me in the early evening when I'm tired from work and after done playing with my son. He's 2 years old. It takes a lot of energy, believe me. But whenever your wall is, Built Go is the solution. It's the healthy replacement to energy drinks, but without any of the fake additives, just natural ingredients that last. If you're tired of getting that cafecito shot to help push you through your day, Built Go is the solution for you. It comes in 1.5-ounce packages that are easy to carry whenever your wall hits you at a meeting at work or to power through a workout. Just put it in your pocket and get through your day. It's the best workout gel on the market. It comes in 3 delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work so well? It combines energy gel with collagen protein that gets absorbed into your system quickly using vitamins, nutrients, honey, and just a kick of caffeine to help you going strong while strengthening joints, soft tissues, hair, and skin so you feel good and you look good too. So visit builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. Up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more, as well as my coverage of the NBA draft and continuing exit interviews. Subscribe to Locked On Heat on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the newest episode. I'm here with Christian Hernandez. We're talking about Duncan Robinson. Came on the scene, had an incredible year, a historically great season, not just in terms of the franchise, but in NBA history, and just had an amazing impact, just being able to unlock so much of what Miami's offense was able to do. As you hinted at in the first segment, his numbers were the best on the team as far as on-off court numbers. Unfortunately, however, there were some weaknesses in his game. He did struggle in the playoffs as we saw teams targeting him a little bit more. But I think on the defensive end is clearly where you start to see Duncan is still a work in progress. I think a lot of it is kind of overstated. I'm sure you probably have numbers that back this up a lot better than I do. But as far as his defense, I think he got targeted. I'm sure there's some prejudice a little bit as far as players going at the white guy. He's a little slow. And we know players feel this way. I mean, we know that players feel, like even J.J. Redick has said it, that he does not like being defended by the white guy on the other team. I know it's ridiculous, but there's some reality to it. And Duncan could be a little foul prone at times. Was there something about his defense that was particularly glaring to you when you watched him play?
I mean, and I'm someone who, if you don't follow me on Twitter, I have always been more defensively inclined growing up. I was always one of the biggest kids growing up. So I was always the guy just lurking underneath the rim, swatting everybody's shots back, you know, trying to, because, you know, I wasn't a ball handler or anything. So that was where I tried to make my
little league play.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just imagine that. I wish I had Sean Bradley's height. That'd be insane. But no, so I've always been more inclined to focus on how players contribute defensively, also because there really aren't a lot of, like, especially for somebody like me who's big on, like, metrics, there are not a lot of really reliable defensive metrics out there. So it's one of those things where you really do have to just try to pay attention and really just kind of trust what your eyes are telling you. And, you know, with Duncan, you have somebody who, he's not the most athletic. He's a little bit slow-footed, yeah. And that gets him in trouble at times. I think he, you know, Frankie from the Heat Beat podcast, you can find him on Twitter at @FrankieG_. He was telling me, because he coaches a lot, and he was telling me that one of the biggest things that Duncan, you know, does regularly is that he kind of leans on his hands to kind of compensate when he's kind of, you know, not gotten himself in the right position. And that's where I feel like he gets into a lot of foul trouble. You know, he tries to compensate for it, ends up slapping, ends up hitting them on the shoulder, things like that. Clearly putting the effort in, but, you know, I think his somewhat limited mobility is always something that he's going to kind of have to overcome. And that's something that he has to be better at. There's going to be times where it's going to be better to just get blown by and do not commit a foul and just, you know, try to get him on the next one. But to kind of reinforce, you know, that overall point, I looked up all players in the playoffs through Synergy Sports, which they do some really, really great analytical tracking. I was looking to find the players who had defended at least 100 possessions per their database. And Of the 59 players that qualified and defended at least 100 possessions in the playoffs, Duncan was 55th in free throw percentage rate, which means that he was fouling offensive players on 14% of the possessions he defended, which is way too high of a mark. When you are letting teams get to the free throw line, you're letting them, not only you're giving them what should be easy points, but you're letting them set their defense back up on the other end. And one of the areas where Duncan really can help is to really stress a transition defense with his shooting. So the last thing that you want to be doing when you got somebody like him on the court is fouling and kind of mucking the game up. So that's something that he definitely has to work on. Though the Heat are in kind of like a bit of a unique situation where they have both Duncan and Tyler who add a ton of value offensively, but have very, you know, that have serious defensive kind of liabilities. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to balance playing both of them a lot of minutes. And I feel like that's why, like, the hunting, especially that we saw in the playoffs, really started to become a problem, because there were times where they had to play Tyler and Duncan together.
Now, I made this point recently, and I think it's fair. I think with Tyler, there's instincts there that you don't see from Duncan as far as his ability to anticipate passing and get into, you know, passing lanes. I think he's got the quickness. He can move laterally better. And there's also the fact that he's 20 years old. Another weakness of Duncan's, through no fault of his, is that he's 26 and a half. There's not quite sure. I'm not sure whether or not there's another level for him that he's capable of reaching physically. We've already seen some growth. We've already seen him adding some muscle, but I'm not sure if he can continue to take another step as far as being a little bit more quick laterally and increases motility. So if that's the case, I'm not sure if Duncan can correct the problems that we're detailing here, because if that's the case, then you're just going to have to, you know, live with Duncan being a flamethrower shooter, but also a weakness and a defensive liability.
Oh, no, definitely. And I mean, I think maybe the one thing that you would kind of hope for is that, you know, he's still relatively green in the NBA, and it doesn't matter what age you are when you come into the league. There are always growing pains. So I guess you can kind of hope that he'll be able to, you know, sharpen his basketball IQ, you know, better understand players' tendencies, you know, really minimize how big of a liability he will be defensively. But at the end of the day, even just what we saw last season in both the regular season and the playoffs, the amount of weight that he brings offensively, both with his own contributions and how he opens things up for other players, greatly outweighs whatever detriment there may be on the defensive end, even at this point. So yeah, while he is already 26, and obviously, you know, we're not going to be looking for, like, you know, a leap in, you know, things like athleticism, obviously, that you would find with people becoming like full blown adults. But, you know, I think he can definitely sharpen, you know, his mind defensively. And he's already, I mean, a rare, rare legendary shooter. That already is enough to make you a contributor. So it's really just a matter of how much further he can take his game, because he's already a big time contributor. Like, let's not understate that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you kind of hinted at something that I just kind of jarred something in me. And I was talking to Bam about his defensive acumen and what he focuses on. And he, you know, takes pride in being the cliched student of the game, but you see it actually map out. And so when he has the athleticism that he does to be able to implement whatever he learns through film study, it's certainly easy to kind of just say, well, Bam's a great defender. And so it's, you know, he doesn't have to rely on film work as much. But I wonder how much film work Duncan actually does. And it's something I'm curious to see if I can get an opportunity to ask him about, because I think he would probably say that a lot of the defensive weaknesses are overblown to some degree. But I wonder if he focuses so much more on making sure that he's getting those open looks on the court, that he is just trying to concentrate through film study almost inherently on his offense rather than focusing as much as he possibly can the defensive end. And we'll never know. I mean, maybe I'm just kind of exaggerating everything here, but at the same time, I wonder how much he actually studies those tendencies. And if not, that might be the next step in his development, as far as you kind of said it also, you know, that he needs to be able to improve a little bit in understanding, well, this guy's going to lean left, or this guy's going to take a first step and then go to this particular move. Because I think the best players, at least on the defensive end, they all do that. Bam talked about Marcus Gasol being a guy who he's kind of understood is so aware that Gasol, like Robinson, not the most fleet-footed, but he just understands exactly what a player is going to do. He knows how to compensate. He knows where to keep his hands and how to move well, not necessarily quickly, but just efficiently with his movements. And I wonder if that's something that Duncan could possibly implement moving forward.
No, 100%. And that's why I'm very slow, I guess, to write off somebody as just, you know, always going to be a bad defender. Yeah. Because defense isn't really about skill. It's about understanding, at least not in the sense like, you know, ball handling, shooting. Like, those are things that require a lot of practice, you know, a lot of repetition. I feel like defense, it does require those things as well, but it also requires you to really understand who you're playing against, what it is they want to do, where they like to go and where they don't like to go. And, you know, understanding who you're playing against and taking away what they want to do, you know, and forcing them into things that make them less comfortable. Also, just having the patient, you know, the presence of mind to not do silly things like jump when someone's going to shoot, you know, and believe me, as someone who's played a ton of basketball, I know how hard it is to resist those kind of urges. It requires a lot of practice and focus on those issues. So I, you know, again, there's no way to know how much, you know, film prep he puts on either side of the ball. But I think that there's a lot of evidence that he really was focusing on his improving his contributions offensively, because right, he went from a guy who basically, I mean, I know it's like a running joke now that Spo has to like scream at Duncan to shoot the ball, but he went from a guy who was super tentative about making a contribution to being a guy who was making incredible slip passes when, you know, defenders would overcommit, you know, on a handoff to him or a spot up opportunity for him, or having the presence of mind to give the ball back to, you know, the screener, Bam, usually, for example, when he didn't have that first shooting opportunity, but he gives it back to Bam and immediately relocates, tries to trick the defender and find a sliver of space to get his shot off, because that's all he needs. So I felt like he showed a lot of growth offensively. And now, like, again, we don't really know how much his focus is on each end, but he definitely this summer needs to focus on the defensive end to just prove that teams can't just go at him over and over again and make that their strategy.
Yeah, and if you're going to take any comfort in this, it's that I think now that he knows he has a foothold, we've already talked about this at length, not you and I, but I think it's been well chronicled, not just in a number of stories, but in conversations with him, that, you know, he has that imposter syndrome that he has to constantly fight his way through. And while I think some of that might be a little overstated, I think there are some questions there that he probably has about whether or not he belongs at this level. He's proven it now, though, and I think it's fair to say that while he's going to continue to work on it, he's absolutely earned his place in the NBA. And now that he has a slight foothold there because of his incredible offense, he can start to expand his game, his understanding of other aspects of it. And I think that's the next step for him to continue to develop some of the other things that we've been talking about, his defense, his passing, and his overall impact. But we'll get into that in the next segment when we talk about what the next part of Duncan's evolution is, and maybe get into some talk about whether or not he's a valuable trade asset, or if he is, in fact, part of Miami's future. We'll debate that next. We're talking here on Locked On Heat. That you can always reach me via email at lockdownheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review. One of the things that we're kind of looking at here when we do these exit interviews is if they were being done by the perspective of the front office. If you're sitting down there with a player as these interviews have historically taken place, you look at back at their season, you say, you know, this is what you did well, but here's what we think you need to constantly work on over the offseason. It's going to be a very short offseason, so it's not a long time to turn things around. But if there's one thing that maybe you can focus on from Duncan, what would you say it is? What would you want to tell him if you could just kind of be in that meeting and at that particular time and say, this is what you need to focus on the most so that you can be a better, more impactful player?
For me, it would probably be building out additional counters from like a spot up position. Or, you know, a position where he's just given a handoff that he got a little bit loose on it.
Yeah.
Because obviously right now, so much of his offense is let's try to set a screen or use some motion and free him up just enough so that he feels comfortable enough to let that shot go. Because obviously there's still a little bit of kind of, you know, resistance, you know, when he doesn't get a perfect opportunity. And obviously, you know, the Heat, you know, are constantly reinforcing to him, take the tough shots because he hits the tough shots statistically. He's as good as most players are wide open when he's covered.
He has a tendency too to kind of reset the play too, where he passes it back to Bam and he'll try to go for the rescreen and see if he can get a better look. And sometimes he'll take that shot, but often he just winds up passing it up. And then it's like, you've already gone deep into a shot clock and you've blown an offensive opportunity there.
100%. And what he was doing, often just going back to Bam, you know, going back to the well, giving him the ball, trying to get loose again, you know, and Bam would look to give him the ball again. It wasn't a bad strategy. Oftentimes, even if it took 2, 3, 4 times of doing the same action over, you know, a 6, 8 second period, they would eventually usually get a somewhat clean look. But that right there is exactly what I like to see Duncan build off, because teams know that he wants to shoot the ball. And at this point, they know that if it's not there, he's going to look to give it back to Bam. He needs to explore different options. He needs to not be afraid to put it on the ground and, you know, look for different passing lanes, take it to the rim. I mean, one of the things that I feel like is really understated about Duncan is that he is a complete scorer. Yeah. He is a highly efficient scorer around the rim. And that's when it's contested or uncontested. He just has that natural touch. So he needs to look to attack the rim more often when he does get those inevitable hard closeouts. And whether it's make, you know, a little slip pass, you know, to a rolling big or to kick it out to somebody in the corner or, you know, above the break, you know, those are all options he has, but he can't look away from, and it's something that's funny enough that Jimmy does a lot too, is look away from actually just taking the layup that's there. And I know that there are arguments to wanting to look for the three-point shot if it's there, obviously just because of the inherent value that it brings.
Right.
But there's nothing more valuable than getting a good look around the rim. And you got to take that when you have it. And Duncan is one of the guys on the team that is probably guilty of passing more of those up than he should.
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't know that I trust his passing. I think he's an understated passer, but I don't think he's as good a passer as Jimmy is. So if he's looking, if he's passing up those great opportunities to make that pass to the 3-point line, it probably will, I don't know, it might not work out as well as he would like it to. And so he has to be able to capitalize on those opportunities a little bit more. I have a question because I'm thinking now in terms of what we saw in the playoffs, and you kind of debunked it to some degree as far as whether or not he was shut down or limited in the playoffs. And I think that we saw that a lot of teams did try to focus on that. But do you think that they're going to be focusing on him as much during the next regular season as they did during the playoffs, because they could see that as a legitimate strategy? Or is that just take too much energy to be able to shut down and constantly run after him as he works his way past those multiple screens there? Because in a 72-game season, as a condensed schedule, and you're trying to preserve your health as much as possible, I just don't know that you can limit what Duncan does as effectively. So I wonder if he's just going to constantly keep relying on his 3-point shooting and not take that next step developmentally.
I mean, I would definitely lean that he will always be more impactful in the regular season, because the kind of effort that it requires defensively to hedge and trap and really work and really just at all costs try to eliminate the jump shot of Duncan Robinson, it strains your entire defense, especially if he makes a quick pass that leads to the defense breaking down, which is what was happening a lot in the playoffs. And it probably wasn't captured in traditional statistics enough for people to see it, because I'm sure what was happening often is that Duncan was making a pass that essentially broke the defense, and then, you know, somebody would make one extra pass and then that person would shoot. So you don't see that assist fall under Duncan. But I would love to know how many hockey assists Duncan had in the playoffs because of the attention that he was getting. Just to kind of like accentuate the point, I was looking at lineup combinations with, you know, which of the Heat players resulted in the best team success whenever they were playing with Jimmy and Bam, who are the two alphas on this team. And in the regular season, that guy was Duncan. The Heat were plus 11.7 net in almost 1,100 minutes with Jimmy, Bam, and Duncan. But that number fell to almost even in the playoffs. And I think a lot of that was the growing pains that Duncan was going through in the beginning. You know, clearly he was, you know, thrown off in one or two games in almost each series, because it took him a little bit to adjust to that kind of attention. But I think going to next regular season, you're going to see the lessons he learned in the playoffs really start to come through in his day-to-day game. And it's just going to make him especially a better offensive player.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that he told me when he was on the show right before the start of the playoffs, was how he was expecting just those micro adjustments being made on a game-to-game basis, that he knew going into it that he was going to be challenged and that he would have to find a way to overcome those. And I think for the most part, again, you pointed at the numbers before, I think you could take away pretty positive feelings about his growth during the playoffs, because he did find a way to have a big bounce back game. Even when he struggled on an occasional game, I think there was always a bounce back game from him. And if that's the case, then he's capable of making those adjustments. And I think that's huge for somebody who was experiencing the playoffs for the first time. Again, given his age, we kind of tend to overlook it. I mean, and of course the story is about Tyler being a starter at age 20 in the playoffs, but the reality is that Duncan's first playoff experience came in a very unusual circumstance in the Orlando bubble, where teams were trying to challenge and shut him down, and he was still able to find a way to contribute at a very high level. So I think we will start to see more growth there. So I know I have to play somewhat of a devil's advocate when it comes to all this, but the reality is I am optimistic about his growth and continuing to be a solid role player in Miami. But there are conversations, debates on Heat Twitter, whether or not he should be a focal point of this team moving forward. And I think they're fair, because I think you look at what Duncan can do, and maybe you're also trying to go after that whale. Given what Duncan does for this team, would you be comfortable including him in a trade package for any player? Because I'm not so sure that I would. And I've made the point about Tyler being virtually untouchable except for your most elite level superstar, a guy like Dame Lillard or a Donovan Mitchell or perhaps a Giannis Antetokounmpo. But otherwise, I'm not so sure I wouldn't make that same argument for Duncan as well.
Yeah, I actually, I was curious kind of because obviously I have my opinions on Duncan and I'm not very quiet about them, but I was curious to see like what the general consensus is on this. So I actually put out a tweet earlier today that ended up getting just shy of 800 votes. So it's a pretty, you know, pretty good size, you know, poll.
Yeah.
And I just asked a simple question. Would you be willing to trade Duncan Robinson for anyone who isn't a top 15 player? And obviously top 15 player, kind of a vague phrase. We're really talking about a max player. Right. That's really what that question is about. It's like, are you willing to trade him for a max player and really an upper echelon max player? And interestingly enough, 75% of the vote was no.
Now, I mean, that's skewed somewhat because of the Heat fans that follow you. And
correct. Right. And obviously everyone, I think everyone was a little bit kind of captured by, you know, it was a little bit of, it was a little magical kind of the season that he had given where what the perception was going into the season relative to, you know, him getting dapped up at the finals brunch by LeBron James and his friend getting stunned by it. Like, you know, this is it's a very huge change of pace in Duncan's life in the last year.
Yeah.
But that goes to show kind of where the pulse of Heat fans are in terms of how important he is. Now, me personally, if we're talking for a Giannis, Bradley Beal, Donovan Mitchell type player, I think you absolutely have to consider trading Duncan Robinson. But at the same time, I don't even know how if it's worth to have that conversation, because if it really came down to it, I feel like the guy who's going to be traded in that scenario is Tyler Hero for yes. various reasons. He's the younger asset. He's got theoretically more upside. And, you know, especially when Tyler Hero needs the ball in his hands, and you've already got two alphas on the roster that also kind of need the ball in their hands a little bit. So the questions start to mount as to fit as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. So getting what up dunk from LeBron doesn't match being recognized by you at the taco stand in Wynwood. I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they're both pretty important, but I would say that in terms of being kind of like shocked, I'd probably go with LeBron. You know?
Yeah, I guess that's fair. it's Duncan. What an incredible season. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I think he's going to be able to continue to do the work. We don't question his work ethic, regardless of whether or not that manifested on the court as far as the defensive acumen or things of that sort. I think we all could recognize that he's put in the time, he's put in the dedication, and he had a phenomenal season. So I'm looking to see what he can continue to add to that because, I think he'll continue to just get better and better in other aspects of this game. But I wonder also, do you think like there's going to be any kind of regression if he were to get moved? Would it be like a Wayne Ellington type regression where, you know, Wayne was able to be maximized so effectively here in Miami and then he goes elsewhere and it's not going to work the same way? I know a lot of that has to do with roster and fit and things of that sort. But can Duncan be as good on other teams as he has been in Miami?
I think that's a really good question, actually. I think there's a strong argument that the environment that he was put in and the role that he was asked to fulfill probably maximized, you know, the results, especially in the regular season when nobody was paying attention to him. But I think the peaks that he hit and the consistency of it, that's rare. That's super rare. It's literally, I had a couple of, you know, kind of historical tweets that I had sent out through the years, but to basically sum it up, what he did last season was comparable only to guys like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Only, which is wild. And even if you make the argument that the Heat kind of helped boost him to that point, I'm sure that if you traded him to another team, that's a guy who's going to be shooting 40% from three. Like unless he's the number one option on whatever team he ends up on, like that's a guy who's going to shoot 40% from three always. And now that he has the confidence, like I don't want to make a prediction as to where Duncan Robinson's going to go because because it would only be like going upwards because like the bubble for me, and I told myself this going into the bubble, don't be surprised if his shooting falls off a cliff.
Right.
Don't be surprised if what we saw in the 2020 regular season was a fluke because that kind of shooting is crazy. It's crazy. Like you have to believe it's
sustainable.
A fluke. Yeah. Right. You have to believe it's a fluke. But then you see him start to do this exact same thing inside the bubble in those few regular season games. And obviously things got much tougher for him once the playoffs came around, but he still shot 40% from three on over seven attempts a game. Something that had only ever been done by, I believe, going, okay, yeah, it was, I looked this up earlier. I wanted to try to include as many players as possible while still hitting like the right benchmarks. So I tried to look for any players in NBA playoff history that had played at least 16 games. I was really trying to capture people that either made the conference finals or the finals just to get, you know, a good, you know, sample of games.
Right.
Shoot at least seven threes a game. And then I just sorted it by 3-point percentage. Only 24 players in NBA history have ever shot seven threes a game in a playoff run. And Duncan Robinson just finished as the 10th most efficient, trailing only Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Reggie Miller, funny enough, J.R. Smith, and Jamal Murray, who actually had the most efficient shooting playoff season ever.
Interesting.
Wow, so, that's historical context, like you don't find these kinds of shooters, you know, just anywhere. I guess maybe J.R. Smith might be the little kind of outlier there. Yeah. But, you know, it speaks for itself. You cannot sustain that accuracy over that length unless it's for real.
All right. Yeah, great talk conversation. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. Christian, please do my listeners a favor and tell them where they can find you on Twitter and all your great, well, I don't know if you're at work, but all your great input on the Miami Heat Beat podcast.
You guys can find me obviously at the Miami Heat Beat podcast, which is available on basically all podcast streaming platforms, Spotify, you know, Google Podcasts, whatever you might be using. And you can find me on Twitter at I Can Be Your hero spelled like Tyler Hero. And you can find me, you know, tweeting about all kinds of stuff, usually basketball and hopefully less politics.
That sounds great. I'm sure we could all use, just kind of basking in the glow of what's happened over the last week or so. But remember to get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat. As soon as you get in your car, you can always check out the Locked On NBA Network for the latest on the draft, news, rumors, and more. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.